Kane is in the building.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to another episode of the 3P Podcast, Season 7, Episode 5. Castle had a good line for it, but I just forgot it. He literally said it 10 seconds ago. I'm your host for this evening, Stephen Bonazzo, and once again, I'm joined by...
Josh Fromowitz.
And Alex Castle. And the line, Stevie, was, we're staying alive with number 5, which I guess more to you right now with you being on the COVID.
Yeah, that's... That's why I said I couldn't wait to do this show, because not only was, I mean, by the time this episode comes out, it would be yesterday, but Thursday, I mean, it was such a great day for sports, and then the Super Bowl coming, but I've been stuck down here in my basement because I have COVID, and it has been very daunting, and you know, just trying to get through it. And yeah, that catchphrase means more to me literally than probably you guys. So but I'm doing well enough to do the show, so that's what matters. Unfortunately, TJ's not here. He's got work. So TJ, you're with us in our spirits, not literally with this podcast, but so big day in sports, trade deadline for the NBA. But there was also a big trade in the NHL. The Rangers acquired Vladimir Tarasenko for a first-round pick 2023, a conditional fourth-round pick.
And Sammy Blum went to St. Louis.
The Blues. And I think the Rangers also got another defenseman, too, but... You know, I mean, we're not going to harp on this one too much. We could talk more about the NHL trades when it gets closer to their deadline. They're just coming off their All-Star game, but it's a big move. The Rangers have won their first two games since All-Star break, so they're hoping this move pushes them back to the Eastern Conference Finals and farther. So, and that's crazy because this was happening in the midst of the NBA trade deadline, which was unbelievable with the amount of moves, the size of the moves. And I mean, so first we started off with earlier in the weekend, Fromowitz, you would know, and these questions can be Sunday. More geared towards
Sunday.
You.
Sunday to be exact.
Kyrie Irving says what goodbye.
Happened?
To...
What happened? I missed it. Inform me.
Oh yeah. He said goodbye to Brooklyn and caught a flight to Dallas, where you guys got Spencer Dinwiddie, Royce O'Neal, a boatload of picks. And then last night, very late, I was watching you guys watch Yellowstone or no? No, you guys don't watch Yellowstone?
I don't, but my parents love it. And oh, it's kind of drawing me in. We'll have to talk about that another time. But oh, yes.
Well, fantastic show. So I was watching that and I just happened to glance down my phone and I see Nets are getting Mikal Bridges and Jay Crowder and another, you know, load of first round picks.
So who do they trade?
Well, that's why I was like, what the heck? Wait a second. This was at 1 o'clock in the morning. It's about KD. KD's going to Phoenix. And I was just like, I couldn't believe it. So before we talk any trades, I mean, obviously these two trades were. These two guys, KD and Kyrie, the biggest guys on the market. I mean, KD didn't even seem like he was on the market, but these were definitely the biggest trades. And from it, a couple questions, you know, just kind of getting your thoughts on the trades, if you actually think these moves will benefit the Nets going forward. And do you think it was a fair package for each? And that's it. Just kind of, I'll just hand it to you.
I think this is a loaded question, so I'm going to take my time with this one because it's kind of different circumstances. And sorry if you hear my dog barking right now. But with Kyrie Irving, the Nets kind of had their arms twisted in this because Kyrie made it very public that he wanted out and he was not going to re-sign in the offseason. So the Nets kind of were scrambling last minute to get a trade done before the deadline in order to stay competitive. And, you know, for what they got, I was happy because you bring back Spencer Dinwiddie, who's a fan favorite in Brooklyn, one of my favorite Nets over the past several years. You bring him back. He's averaging 17 points this year, but 2 years ago when he was with us before he got hurt, he was averaging 20 points. And that was, I think, Kevin Durant, Kyrie's first season. So I was ecstatic to bring Spencer Dinwiddie in. More importantly, though, was Dorian Finney-Smith, a guy who Dallas said was untouchable last year. He is the epitome of a 3-and-D guy, more so D. He really is the perfect guy in the NBA today. He fits on any single team. He's a winning basketball player. Undrafted out of Florida, spent his first 7 years in Dallas. He's a gritty, tough guy and has really worked on developing a shot, a three-point shot. I think he's close to shooting 40% from three this year. His numbers aren't beautiful, but he rebounds the ball well, and he's been scoring. So I'm really excited to see what he does for the team. Look, you can't replace a guy like Kyrie Irving's talent, nor Kevin Durant. We'll get into that in a little bit. But, you know, I have seen some positives. As soon as Kyrie Irving requests a trade and gets the boot out of Brooklyn, and I was actually at the game on Saturday where I got to witness this in person, this was really the birth of Cam Thomas. This was his coming out party. And Castle and I have been talking about it all week. And, you know, frankly, I knew he was a scorer. But I thought it was kind of like, you know, this little thing is going to die out soon. It looks like he's here to stay. Three straight games of scoring 40 plus points. The youngest NBA player to do it ever. Only Allen Iverson has scored 40 points in three straight games before turning 22. Cam Thomas is legit. And I think the most impressive thing is his ability to also pass, and he's worked on his defense. And that's really what's kept him on the court, because the Nets have known about his scoring, but it's more so, can he facilitate? Can he also defend in order to, you know, stay on the court? Because the Nets just gave up 60 points between Kyrie Irving and Kevin Durant. Kevin Durant was averaging 30 points at Kyrie Irving, just over 25. So that's 55 points combined by the two of them. So you're going to have to make that up somehow. And right now, I'm obviously Cam Thomas isn't going to keep averaging 40 points on the season. Would hope he can, but let's be a little realistic. But if he can provide a constant offense and really help jumpstart this Nets scoring, I really like where we're heading. And now to answer the second part, this one was the unexpected part. I wouldn't say unexpected, because I kind of expected, but I didn't expect to wake up in the middle of the night and see Kevin Durant was traded. I was hoping, you know, it would be in the off season and it would be like a mutual thing, but there were so many reports that came out where the Nets and Kevin Durant were talking. Kind of got the feeling that once Kyrie Irving was moved, then Kevin Durant was going to be moved shortly after. They're a package deal. Like, if one is there, both are there. If one isn't there, the other isn't there, type of thing. They're a package deal. So, yes, Kevin Durant was definitely more invested in the team than Kyrie Irving. And I'm not upset with the way how Kevin Durant left. It's safe to say that he might be the best player that I've seen wear Nets uniform in my lifetime. But, you know, with given his injury history, And given the package we were able to get for him, I'm really satisfied with the Nets moving forward. Look, we're not a championship team by no means, but I do think we could be a very competitive playoff basketball team, similar to 2018-2019 when D'Angelo Russell, Spencer Dinwiddie, Jared Allen, Caris LeVert were leading that Nets team. I think that with the Nets have right now, you just have a bunch of selfless guys who just are going to play some hard competitive basketball.
And I mean, say if I'm wrong, I think that team with D'Angelo Russell, Caris LeVert, those guys, Dinwiddie, I think that that team was more dangerous than the Nets teams the past like two or so years.
And that's why when we made the initial trade for Harden, why I was really taken aback, because we saw Jared Allen blossom into a star right before our eyes. The Nets didn't have a center then. We saw Caris LeVert being this constant offense, and you got rid of those two guys. Look, in hindsight, maybe I, as crazy as this might sound, it's allowed Nick Claxton to, honestly, he could be better than Jared Allen with the way he's playing right now. I think Nick Claxton could win Defensive Player of the Year right now. So who knows where, what could have been, what all of this and that.
Well, I mean, and listen, you got the Nets, KD and Kyrie, they were the biggest fishes on the market at the time of their free agency. You know, many thought the Knicks would get him, or sorry, Castle, or any other teams, and the Nets, they swooped him, they got him. And I mean, at that time, you know, that was before Kyrie kind of started having a lot of these, some of the comments he was making, and kind of his, the way he was viewed, not as a player, but as a leader, and, you know, like a personality changed. And then KD was a lot younger before, I mean, he was coming off the Achilles injury, but before some of his other injuries too now. So yeah, like, I mean, you tried this big experiment to get these guys, and I mean, you can't say it didn't fail. I mean, you only won one series, especially when you had guys like that. But you tried it didn't work out. But I think now, like, let Cam Thomas grow into that player. See what Mikal Bridges, I mean, Mikal Bridges, I think, is a very underrated. I love that you guys got him. And I was seeing on the NBA, like, today's
special. Like I was saying about Dorian Finney-Smith, you have that now in Mikal Bridges. And people have said around the league, they think Mikal Bridges might be the best perimeter defender in the league.
I will agree with that.
Think about this, Stevie and Castle. The Nets can throw out a closing lineup of Ben Simmons at point guard, Royce O'Neal at shooting guard, Mikal Bridges at the three, Dorian Finney-Smith at the four, and Nick Claxton, who I said should be Defensive Player of the Year this year. That's a very good defensive lineup.
I think you guys have more of a complete team now than you have ever had.
We didn't address the one need, which I really thought we should have addressed at the trade deadline, which was getting a backup center. We still don't have that, but it's okay.
Well, I mean, you know, but now you have more pieces to work with. And like I said, let Cam Thomas, if he's going to be that scorer and he's shown that he can, you know, put up 40 points consecutive games, like that's not just like, oh, he just did it one time. I mean, that's hard to do. And if he's done it three nights in a row, listen, like he plays.
Why Leonard, Paul George, and who was the third game that we just played?
Oh, who was that against? Oh, gosh. Or who was that?
Mikal Bridges. How funny.
Oh, the Suns, yeah. So, you know, if he's going to be that guy that could be the go-to scoring option, good. And then let, you know, Mikal, and then let Cam Johnson be the other guy to shoot the three like he did in Phoenix. So I like this Nets team so much more than I ever did when you guys had Harden, Kyrie, KD, Blake Griffin, LaMarcus Aldridge. Like,
And one more thing I just want to add on is I think it's sort of going to what you're getting to. And then we want to move on from the Nets, I'm sure, finally. This Nets team, like I said, isn't a championship team. There's less pressure on the Nets to do well, less eyes, Hopefully that also means Ben Simmons. He won't have the same pressure of being the guy next to Kevin Durant, Kyrie Irving. Now he could kind of take a back seat and just play his game without the eyes and the constant media and this and that. Yes, he's still in New York, but it's significantly less national media coverage that the Nets are going to be getting as opposed to 2 days ago.
And totally. So, you know, obviously we can talk more about how these moves, you know, could pan out. And then, you know, we have so much to talk to today. I would love to spend all episode just dissecting each trade, but there's too many big ones and too many what ifs. So it'll be interesting to see. Well, that's it too. If it wasn't Super Bowl, you know, Sunday, this coming Sunday, I would say let's keep talking. But
we had a whole show planned about just Super Bowl.
I know. And now with this whole trade deadline,
upset with us that we're starting the show off with some trade deadline. He was all ready to talk about the Kelce Bowl and Rihanna.
But Castle, I'll make it up for you. There's one of my favorite moves, low key, I think, of the trade deadline was Josh Hart to the Knicks. I love that move for numerous reasons, and I'll let you get more into it too. But I mean, he's just a kind of player that any team can benefit from. You know, just a great defender, could score, and just a high energy motor guy. But then he now plays with his former teammate Brunson, who's really evolved into like a phenomenal player. I think an all-star player. Jalen Brunson was robbed. And maybe now that Kyrie is no longer in the East, maybe Brunson can fill that spot. Unless if that doesn't work that way, I don't know.
It's a draft. I don't think it'll matter.
Probably won't. But either way, I really like this move. I mean, you guys weren't playing Cam Reddish anyways. And you know Josh Hart, he's going to play. So I want to hear your thoughts on this. And then I also want to hear, now he's going to have to, someone's role is going to take a bit of a hit. Who do you think that may be? Who, you know, like, where do you think he'll fit into that lineup? So, Castle, go ahead.
So, by the way, I am very excited to talk about Rihanna later when we get into the Super Bowl talk. But I love that we started off with the deadline. Like you guys said, it was too good not to bring up. I was very happy. You know, it's funny. I watched Josh Hart play the Knicks earlier in the season while he was with Portland. And I just looked at him and I just said, here's a really scrappy guy. He can play both sides of the ball well. He's got good energy about him. And then when I see the trade last night, I was very happy with it. You know, like you said, Cam Reddish was being totally wasted on the team. He wasn't, I think the tweet was, he wasn't in the starting lineup since the middle of November. And then he didn't play since December 3rd. And which is crazy because he was a top five pick and the potential is there for him. And Tibbs is very, you know, very set in his ways. So once he was benched, you had the feeling that he was going to be moved on. But I love Josh Hart. You know, one of the things that I talked about last week when we talked about the Knicks, and one of my biggest concerns, and I'm really starting to notice this more the more I watch the games, is rebounding. Yeah, we're a little better with the offensive rebounding, and I think we're going to get an even bigger boost now with Josh Hart. But defensive rebounding, we just can't crash the boards. And it's really tough when Mitch Robb is hurt and we have Jericho Sims starting. So I think, I mean, we do have Hartenstein, and he's great, but we need some more assistance with that. So I think that's great. And then you talk about the reuniting with Brunson, which I love. I mean, you know, yesterday was his retirement ceremony at Villanova. And I saw a video of his reaction and it was just so wholesome. And you can just tell that there's going to be a tremendous energy there with him now. And I think he's just going to evolve the team's overall game. Obviously not, you know, in big waves like some of these other guys will, but crashing the boards more, help run up scoring a little more. So I think it's going to be great. And then to answer your other question, whose minutes I think are going to get reduced, looking at who we play in the rotations, I'd probably have to say Grimes. I think Grimes is definitely going to be taking a cut. I mean, I love Grimes, but I'd like to see Hart take a little bit more of his minutes. Grimes is great. He's a little inconsistent with the ball, but he's a big hustler. So maybe him, you know, taking a step back a little bit, keeping him a little more fresh. Maybe he's not rushing as many shots and increases our 3-point percentage even more. So very happy with it. I'm glad that, you know, everyone else is safe for now with the Knicks. And yeah, they actually, you know, they made a good move. I mean, we traded a first round pick, but as both of you guys can attest as non-Knicks fans, we don't have a good history of drafting. So I'd rather trade that pick away.
Hey, you were just talking about Grimes. That's a good draft pick that the Knicks hit on last year.
We've been doing better. And I liked the Toppin draft pick too. He's not being used how I'd like, but overall with the ups and downs we've had with drafting, I don't feel angry or like we wasted the pick in this trade. And listen, I wish Reddish the best of luck. You know, maybe playing with a guy like Dame can boost up his confidence a little bit. You know, maybe he works with the Portland setup. I don't know, but very happy with it. And I know he's excited, and I know Knicks Nation is ready to welcome him with open arms.
Yeah, and I you know, like you said, Brunson's reaction, that was priceless. And I think he'll just mesh well. And I have some of the Knicks games I've been watching, you know, like you said, the rebounding's been a big, especially against the Clippers, like they were just out rebounding you guys like no one else's business. Even the Sixers.
That was a tough game. We should have closed that deal out in regulation. When Batum was open on the wing and he hit that, I was like, this is ugly. And then if you somewhat know the Knicks, you know that a game like that, when we're going into overtime, 9 out of 10 times, it's going to be a loss.
Oh, yeah. And the foul trouble, I have noticed like Grimes has gotten early foul trouble. So now Hart just gives you another piece, but a solid piece that, you know, if someone gets into, you know, say if he gets into foul trouble, now Grimes, you know, he's not going to be, you know, he shouldn't have as many fouls as he has now playing in a larger role. So I think it will really benefit. And I mean, and I got to imagine that if they went out and got him, I know they went out and got Reddish, but this time around, like, you know, Hart must be the, you know, he's the kind of guy Tibbs wants. So he's going to play. And Brunson must have put a word in or two saying, you know, we should get this guy too, since, you know, they're probably good friends. So all in all, I think that's a great move. And the last NBA move we'll talk about was a big one, the three-team deal between the Jazz, the Lakers, and the Timberwolves. So the Lakers, they got a lot of good pieces. They got D'Lo back. He's back as a Laker, the first team that drafted him. They got Malik Beasley and Jared Vanderbilt. Westbrook got sent to Utah along with, I believe, some picks. And then the Timberwolves got Mike Conley. And I think they got some picks too. And there might be a couple other players. But, you know, the big pieces were Westbrook going to Utah and then the Lakers getting, you know, getting D'Lo and Beasley and Vanderbilt. So, and then the Lakers also traded for Bamba. So, I mean, the Lakers, and then they traded for Rui Hachimura earlier in the year, or like a couple weeks ago. So the Lakers have made some moves to really be, to try to contend and climb up the West. I mean, granted, now they have KD coming back into the West. They got Kyrie coming into the West, the teams that, you know, that are right above them. So, but listen, I got to give them credit for making these moves. I think they're good moves. I like D'Lo and Beasley and Vanderbilt as better pieces for the Lakers than, say, Westbrook and some of these other guys. So, for any of you, each of you, if whoever wants to answer, you know, do you think this move puts them more in contention? Not saying that they're going to win the West, but puts them more in contention of fighting for the West for that, you know, for the conference finals and coming out? Or do you think they're still miles, you know, years beyond what they can do, and their kind of their time is over, and that, you know, now the Suns getting KD, you know, even the Mavericks with now Luka and Dallas, and then just the Nuggets and the Warriors, like they're too much for the Lakers, or do you think Lakers actually have some guys now they could surprise some people? So whoever wants to go.
I'm a D'Lo guy. I'm happy for him. It just didn't work out, frankly, since he left Brooklyn. Now he gets to go back to the team that drafted him, and he's due for a payday at the end of the season. So he's got something to prove. I think it'll work better in Los Angeles this go around than it did with Russell Westbrook in Los Angeles, only because of his ability to knock down shots from the outside versus Russell Westbrook. That's one of Russell Westbrook's weaknesses. And D'Angelo Russell is very good playing off the ball. Obviously there's things that Russell Westbrook does a lot better than D'Angelo Russell, but I think for this Lakers team, it's very much what they need. They're a horrible 3-point shooting team, and now they definitely got a little bit of an upgrade with D'Angelo Russell. But I think a big part of this trade was Mike Conley going to the Timberwolves. And I know, Castle, you like Mike Conley. But they had so many different personalities in that team. You have a young blossoming star in Anthony Edwards. Frankly, he's on the verge of being a superstar. He's more than just a star at this point. You have Karl Anthony Towns, who people have said doesn't really have the best attitude, and he's kind of been given a backseat role to Anthony Edwards, even though both of them were former number one overall picks. And then this year they blew up their draft, their team and picks when they went out and got Rudy Gobert. And so far it really hasn't looked that promising. And then D'Angelo Russell. So you have so many different personalities, such a young team, no real veterans on this team to help mentor and guide these personalities. So adding in Mike Conley to be the point guard, I think, was a brilliant move, because they really had no sense of direction of where to go and how to lead. So I think that's probably the biggest takeaway from this trade from my standpoint.
I didn't even think of that when I thought about this trade, but I agree. I think that is, and I do like Connolly a lot. I think he had a solid run with Utah. And maybe that's what the Minnesota organization realized, that no one was really stepping up to take a leadership role. And you have a bunch of these young guys with mixed personalities. And it's really disappointing about Karl Anthony Towns. And listen, the guy's been through some very tough personal stuff these past few years, so I'm not going to, you know, totally bag on him. But former number one overall pick, you fit the mold of a modern day center so well. You're not in a crazy market. Your organization is trying to bring in pieces to attempt to help. I know when we talked about this trade when it happened, that we were all like Gobert and Cat together at the 4 and 5 is going to be very interesting. And clearly it hasn't panned out so far. And that could also be a personality thing. We all know about Gobert and his struggles in Utah with teammates. So this could be very good to have a veteran guy like that. And kind of backtracking a little bit with the Lakers, you know, we talked about the Lakers last week, and we talked about, are they going to make moves? What are they going to do? Do I think this is going to be the ultimate game changer this season? Absolutely not. But you're bringing in young guys who got some nice game to them. You got LeBron, who knows what his future is going to be like. But for the time being, I think it's good moves. And I think now, even though he wasn't part of this trade specifically that we're talking about, I think even bringing in Mo Bamba is going to be very nice for this Lakers team, creating some depth with the center position. So I think those are probably the biggest two takeaways, is mixing it up and bringing D'Lo back and bringing these other guys and Mike Conley going to Minnesota. So I agree with Josh about that. And I think it's a nice move for the Lakers too. And Russell Westbrook, I think the rumor, or not the rumor, the speculation was he's going to be
bought out. He's probably going to be bought out, yeah.
Bought out by Utah.
I think that'll be very interesting because I think a lot of teams will be interested in him.
I hope he goes to a contender at this point. I really do. I really do. Not.
I thought the Clippers were going to get him.
And you know what? I wouldn't count the Clippers out for making a deep playoff run. So those are my biggest takeaways from this trade.
Plus, the Clippers did trade John Wall. So, you know, that opens up another guard spot. And
Reggie Jackson.
Reggie, yeah, so... So, yeah, I could definitely see it. And I think – I forgot what other team I saw that he could possibly, you know, sign if he was bought out. But Promise, you were saying that you have one other move that you want to talk about quickly, and maybe one that most people will, you know, with all these other big names going, will kind of overlook and really probably shouldn't, is a Bones Highland trade. Got traded from Denver to – what team did he get traded again?
The Clippers, which is kind of
why. Yeah, so perfect. Here you go.
I think from watching him, he's a very shifty, skilled guard. He's kind of like a Tyrese Maxey, kind of like Emmanuel Quickley, kind of like Cam Thomas. All of those young, flashy, quick guards, you know, could score, but their defense is a little suspect at times. He was given an opportunity his rookie year when Jamal Murray was injured, but now Jamal Murray is healthy. There's no opportunity for him. Plus, Jokic likes to ball handle. So I'm really excited for him to now be the point guard, the sole point guard on this Clippers team, and not have to look over his shoulder and have that competition. Which I said that wrong. Competition is good, but a guy like him to be able to play alongside Kawhi Leonard and Paul George is going to be very interesting. And I think the Clippers, who were already, people were talking and they can make a deep playoff run, I think now going forward they have a point guard on top of a very deep team.
And I agree, and I really you know, when I saw he was trading, especially to another West team, I was a little shocked that the Nuggets would move on from him and then especially trade him to the Clippers. But you know, it's just the business of the sport, and you know, they felt that's what was best for the team. So, I mean, it's going to be, you know, we'll definitely talk about more of these trades and how they, you know, because a lot of these players now, you know, they just got traded, so they haven't even played for their new team yet. So once they start playing for their new teams and stuff, I mean, we'll definitely talk more about it, especially as football is winding down and before some of the off-season events pick up for the NFL. Like, you know, it's going to be a lot of heavy focus on basketball, but it'll be, you know, be fun. And you know, so between the NHL trade deadline coming up and then their end of the season, you know, the NBA, the All-Star game in 2 weeks and trade deadline today, and you know, there's a lot of good news and storylines coming out with those two respective sports. So definitely looking forward to getting more in depth with that. But you know, we can only talk so much about it because I mean, this is the biggest event in football. I mean, even though sometimes, since the Bears haven't made it since 2007 and haven't won it since 1985, I like to think the NFL draft is the biggest event, but it's...
Plus, the NFL is scripted these days anyway, so...
Exactly.
At this point.
Exactly. So that's why the draft is not scripted, so that's why the draft is too good. But it's a Super Bowl. Super Bowl Sunday, Kansas City Chiefs, Philadelphia Eagles, meeting in Glendale, Arizona. One of actually my favorite stadiums to watch the Super Bowl in. So many great games have been played there. Castle, I know you probably liked one of the last Super Bowls played there. Not the last one between, obviously, New England and Seattle, but when New England and the Giants first met, that was a good game there. David Tyree's catch. So that stadium has had some really good games and moments there. So I'm hoping for another one this weekend. So let's just talk some storylines and stuff with this game. I mean, there's a lot of storylines within, you know, first couple ones. I mean, you know, the two brothers playing, Jason on Philly and Travis with Kansas City, both just superstars on their team. I mean, Jason Kelce anchoring that line for Philly while Travis being that dynamic weapon for Mahomes. And obviously Mahomes versus Jalen Hurts. I mean, these two guys going against each other. I mean, just two of the top QBs in the league, especially this year, the MVP candidates. And then really just, you know, Andy Reid coaching the Chiefs, and then he also coached the Eagles. So many good storylines. So my first question, Castle, I'll ask you this. Obviously, you know the Eagles pretty well. You play them. What do you think is going to be the biggest, like, thing that sways one team or the other? Like, which position group against the other position group? Whether it's the Eagles, you know, receivers against the Chiefs secondary or whatever, you know, you pick it. Which one do you think could have the biggest impact and can sway how the game goes?
I would have to say the defense. I don't know what the latest reports on Mahomes are, but if it's coming out that he is not 100%, then I got to give it to the defense.
I think from what I saw, what the Pat McAfee show was reporting earlier in the week, is he is not 100%, but there's no limitations as to how the Chiefs are game planning and how they're going to run their offense.
Okay, so
take it as you will.
Great to hear for the sense of the overall game, but I'm still going with the defense because I think the Chiefs line is solid, but I don't think it's anything fantastic. I don't think it's anything that's going to be like, this is going to be a real battle in the trenches. I mean, you look at the guys that they have across the board lining up, you know, on the defensive line, then you talk about their secondary, you know, they're just so balanced on both sides of the ball, but I have to give the upper hand to the defense. And I think, you know, even though you said there's no limitations, Josh, which I fully believe, I think Andy Reid is going to let it fly this game. I could definitely see the Chiefs working with their three back situation. We know Clyde Edwards-Helaire will be back, so could expect to see some reps from him. I think Pacheco is going to get the ball a lot. We know they like to use McKinnon. So I can see the defense bringing a lot of pressure, which forces them to experiment with the running back position, because I don't know if Hardman's going to play either. So, and he's not going to play. So I think it's going to be the defense that's really going to give this offense a hard time. And even though there's no limitations and, you know, he's good enough to play, we saw what happened when he got hurt earlier in the playoffs with this ankle. If he has one freak injury where that ankle's rolled on, it can dial back the game completely. So I think it's really in the defense's hands when it comes to controlling the Chiefs overall game.
And I could see it. And I want to see, it was actually on the Michael Kay show earlier in the week, and I was taking a listen, and they were kind of talking about this in the Super Bowl, and I forgot, might have been I think it was Michael Kay, and probably, you know, all of them were kind of talking about it, and they were saying, you know, the last time Mahomes was in the Super Bowl, I mean, the Chiefs got flat out beat by the Buccaneers because he was getting pressured all game by that Bucs, you know, D-line. And, you know, that year their D-line was good. Now, granted, the Chiefs have upgraded their line by drafting Creed Humphrey, trading for Orlando Brown, signing Joe Tooney or Thuney. I think Tooney might be pronounced, but but this Eagles D-line and just defense in general is so much better than that Buccaneers defense. That Buccaneers defense was good. So that's just saying something. I mean, I think this Eagles team is like, they recorded, I don't know if they beat the Bears record of most sacks in the season. They might have.
I think they're a couple, I don't know the number.
They had like 77 for the season, I think.
I think they're a few, maybe
off, right?
Or away from breaking the all-time, including Super Bowl. Is that the Bears record?
I know the Bears had a sack record, so I'm assuming it might be that one, but you know, we could double check for that. But I mean, that's seeing something. So
where's TJ when we need him?
Yeah, exactly. So we'll have to look at more info and do some more research on that. But you know, like Castle, like you were saying, even if Mahomes has no limitations, but he's not going to be 100%. We know that he's not going to be 100%. Maybe he'll be 88%, you know, 90% even, but he's not going to be 100%. And I mean, that D line, they're going to cause pressure, you know, and they have depth, and it doesn't matter who they rotate in and out, they're going to cause pressure. So I could see that being, you know, a big factor in this game is, you know, the Chiefs offense compared to the Eagles defense. Now, Fromwitz, I want to say this to you. You know, we can expect this to be a high scoring game because we know both offenses can score. Obviously, Jalen Hurts threw for, you know, I don't even know how many touchdowns, but he rushed around many touchdowns. Mahomes threw for like the most amount of yards in his career and like probably the second highest touchdowns in his career. How aggressive do you really see these two teams being, or who do you think is going to be more aggressive, or like, you know, to start the game off? Do you think you see them more kind of playing it strategically, or do you think, you know, kind of whoever gets the ball first, they're just going to try to attack, and that's kind of how the game's going to go? Like, kind of give me your thoughts on, you know, how do you think these teams are going to approach the game, especially from the beginning, and then obviously once a game's going, and then you adjust to it then. So how do you foresee this game starting off, and how each team kind of, you know, starts their play style? Like,
I feel like the Eagles play style, and Cassie, you would probably know better than both of us, I feel like the Eagles play style all year has been start fast and just playing aggressive and keeping the foot on the gas. And that's what led them to having the best record in football. I don't remember the exact stat, but they did not trail many games this year. And both of these two teams have not trailed since the new year, I believe. So I guess that in a sense that would attest to both of these two teams being aggressive. Now, I can see whoever gets the ball first wanting to be aggressive and, let's say, making a crucial fourth down play or whatever. But Andy Reid is a genius. So I don't really necessarily think that he is the type to want to go for a fourth down on their own 30-yard line, like a Nick Sirianni would. So, in short, I think Philly would be more aggressive with the circumstances versus Kansas City. But I don't really think that will be much of a factor in the beginning.
That's fair.
What's crazy about Philly and what I've noticed when they come out of the gates with these games is you're 100% right, Josh, is the intensity is there early on, but the way that they execute it, it just doesn't feel like, it feels like it's just flowing effortlessly. And that's what I think is gonna, that could trip up the Chiefs early on, is that, you know, he's throwing a 50 yarder to Brown. He's hitting Smith with the 20-yarder in the end zone for a touchdown, or Sanders ends up running 10. It doesn't matter what it is. I just feel like with how balanced this team is, it's intensity, but it's not intensity that's so in your face. It just flows.
I feel like the big problem for the Chiefs will be how they could defend the run game, because the Philly will force feed the run game and shove it down your throat to the point where you really have no chance to do anything, because whether it's Jalen Hurts, whether it's Miles Sanders, or in the Giant game we saw Gainwell and Boston Scott being factors, they really can just attack you on the ground so many different ways. And when you think that you have Miles Sanders stopped, Jalen Hurts just ran for an option, he just got 15 yards, and they're just gonna keep running and running and running down your throats, and it's impressive, because then they could also just turn to their very talented receivers. So it'll be a very tough test for this Kansas City defense.
And I'll say, you know, kind of going off like who I will give the advantage to, and really, I mean, if you think about it, like pretty much talent, I'll give the advantage to the Eagles. You know, they got better O-line and D-line. I mean, listen, the Chiefs D-line has been playing really well this playoffs, and especially Chris Jones. But it doesn't, you know, Philly's D-line, I mean, you saw how dominant they've been all season, you know. And then the Eagles secondary, you know, I'll give them the advantage, you know. Tight end, I'll give Kansas City, obviously. Quarterback, obviously. Receivers, I'll give Philly. But where I think the Chiefs have the biggest advantage is in coaching. And nothing, not that I'm saying, you know, Nick Sirianni's not a good coach or their coordinator's not a good coach. It's not that. But just situations the Chiefs have been in, you know, one, or you could say, well, the Eagles just won the Super Bowl too. Yes, but it was a whole different coaching staff, you know? And, you know, yes, a lot of these players were on the team. You know, Kelsey was on that Super Bowl winning team, Brandon Graham, Fletcher Cox, you know, but there's still a lot of new guys. While the Chiefs, you know, they still have a lot of guys that were on that Super Bowl team too, but then they have a lot of the coaches that were on that part of that Super Bowl team. But the biggest thing is, even just in this playoffs, I mean, with Mahomes getting hurt and still able to beat the Jaguars, still able to manage to defeat the reigning AFC champs, the Bengals, you know, who have had so much success against the Chiefs. So the Chiefs just know how to handle situations well. And I'm not saying that the Eagles don't, but the Eagles haven't really, like, you know, they had a bye week the first week. And so did the Chiefs, you know, but still. So they had a bye week. And then the second week.
We can also call that a bye week. It's yeah. Okay.
You know, they played. So, yeah, they play the Giants, you know, and I know, obviously, like, I mean, Eagles fans said the Giants sucked and blah, 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 they, you know, whatever. And like, and then they just wiped the floor with them. You know, it wasn't a challenge, really. And then the 49ers just had the worst injury luck I've ever seen in that game. So they weren't going against a full strength 49ers team.
Prayers up to Brock Purdy. We here, on behalf of the 3-Peat podcast, we send our condolences.
So, you know, retweet for that. But we haven't seen the Eagles really, like, this is going to be their toughest test yet. And it's in the biggest game. You know, so I'm just saying, like, the Chiefs, it seems like they've had more difficult situations. They, you know, they've been in and they've been able to, I feel like they're able to deal with them better than the Eagles will. And I'm not saying that the Eagles are not a run well, you know, a well-run team and they don't know how to handle it to adversity in this. I'm not saying that, but it seems like everything has been going the Eagles' way, or like Castle, like you said, everything is just looking so effortless, you know. And it just seems like something's got to give a little bit, and there's got to be a little challenge here and there where something doesn't go the Eagles' way, and how do they respond to that? And maybe, you know, maybe they'll prove me wrong, and, you know, but I've seen the Chiefs do it day in and day out, especially with Mahomes. Like, you can't doubt them. And I think that's where the Chiefs have the bigger, you know, more of an edge and what could win them the Super Bowl. So, you know, it's tough. Just like I said, the AFC Championship was tough to predict. You know, this game, like I said, the Eagles are definitely the more talented team, but there's a lot more other factors going into it. So, Castle, Framis, you have something?
Yes, the Eagles are very difficult to defend, but one thing that you kind of talked on, but you didn't really talk enough about, is how difficult the Chiefs are because of Andy Reid's play calling. And this is why you said that Andy Reid is the better coach in this matchup, is because you really can't defend for what the Chiefs are going to do. I can guarantee that, as like Charles Barkley would say, he'd like scream guarantee, that when they get inside the red zone, that they're going to run some sort of trick play that they've been practicing for God knows how long. And it's going to look like it was meant to be in their offense, just like Philly did with the Philly special. Kansas City has their own sort of trick play, whether it's Travis Kelce lining up under center or like a triple reverse. I don't really know what they have lined up, but we've seen in every playoff game and most regular season games that they'll do some sort of trick play, including the weird one a couple games ago where they had like all of them just twirling. I don't even know what it was called, but it was against the Raiders. I think that's what it was. It was a weird one, but it was cool. And I think we could see the Chiefs doing some sort of trick play, keeps the defense on your toes and makes you vulnerable on defense because you have to defend for, yes, the run and the pass. But then when it comes to the Chiefs, you have to be ready for the trick plays.
No, totally. And I mean, I could expect a trick play on both sides, but definitely from the Chiefs. So now, you know, I want to ask you guys, who do you think now, kind of like a Super Bowl MVP? Now, they don't have to necessarily win the MVP, but who's a player that could really affect this game?
X Factor.
Yeah, kind of like an X Factor. So, like, yeah, it doesn't mean that because obviously, you know, quarterbacks typically get it. I mean, I know Von Miller did get it that one time, but really, like, it's kind of MVPs are more geared toward, like, you know, quarterbacks and stuff like that. But who is a player that you guys think can really have an impact in this game? And yeah, be an X Factor that could help lead their team to victory. So, Castle, you go first.
So I'm going to go a little bit outside the box here. And I'm going to go with Kenneth Gainwell. I know that he's probably lower on the totem pole for the offense, but he's kind of that gadget guy where he can be used all over the place with the ball. And I feel like the defense will have somewhat of a plan for Sanders. And I think Sirianni's going to want to throw them off a little bit, use Gainwell more. I don't see Boston Scott being used a whole lot. So I think Gainwell could definitely be an unexpected X factor, but I'll also just throw out a regular name, and I'll do it on the Chiefs this time. I'm going to say Chris Jones for their defense. I do like one of their linebackers, Bolden. I think his name's Nick Bolden. He's a younger guy. He's going to be solid in the run game, but Chris Jones has just been anchoring this defense as a whole, and I think he's the only one that can really give the Eagles' offensive line a hard time. So the lesser name, I'm going to say Gainwell, but then, you know, one of the bigger names, I'm going to say Chris Jones. So giving you one free.
Appreciate that. Fromitz, well, it's up to you how many you want to choose. Or
so immediately, I thought you were going to ask for a Super Bowl MVP. And that's what I'm going to give right now, and then I'll give a lesser name X Factor after. My Super Bowl MVP is going to be Travis Kelce. We saw Cooper Kupp win last year. I think Travis Kelce is going to keep the streak going of non-quarterbacks. And frankly, when you think of this Chiefs offense, yes, obviously Pat Mahomes, but their receivers are not what they used to be with Tyreek Hill. Travis Kelce is going to be a big part of their offense. Frankly, I could see him scoring multiple times. He's going to have to in order to keep up with Philly's high-powered offense. And a lesser name, I think, who can make a big factor is former New York Giant cornerback James Bradberry. I believe he was an all-pro this year, right, Castle?
If he wasn't, then he was snubbed. He had to be. He had.
I think he was and Slay wasn't. I think that's what it was.
He had a hell of a season. You know what? I would be very – it would be funny to me in a way if he ends up getting that for the Eagles.
I just think that between their corners, they have a knack for attack, being aggressive on the ball, and they're probably not going to want to test Darius Slay as much. And you know that that comes with James Bradbury. He is just automatically the other side of the ball. And he's, yes, last year he had a down year for the New York Giants, but the year before it, he was as dominant as they come. So he still has the ability to make plays and be a difference maker. Was a couple of years ago for the Giants, and this is the biggest stage, and he's still boys with LPG, so LPG is going to like this one.
I also think just compared to Slay, he's just got a better build. Like, he's got more length to him, and I think he's going to be a big part of the secondary. If you want to talk about matchups, I don't know, because he's a gadget guy, but I wouldn't be surprised if you see Tony a decent amount matched up with Slay. I feel like that would be a fun matchup to watch. He's someone that I don't want to do well in this game, but Bradbury, whatever, he's an Eagle, he does well. We screwed up letting him go, but
I feel like that's ironic. You're hoping that the Eagle does well and the guy on the Chiefs doesn't.
Well, here's why. Because Bradbury had, you know, it wasn't his fault that he left. He didn't do anything. He regressed, and new management came in and they wanted to go in a different direction. So fine. I have no issues with him. I don't remember exactly what the tweet was, but there's been an open tweet from him recently, something about coming back to New York. I don't know exactly what it was. Point is, I have no ill will with Bradbury, but Tony was just such a clown about how he left, and I just think it's going to inflate the guy's ego into a whole nother level if they end up winning. Obviously, I want the Chiefs to win, but for him personally, it is what it is. But yeah, that's the only guy on the Eagles I'll be happy for is Bradbury, and frankly Kelce too. I think Jason Kelce's a great guy. And we talked about storylines with him. His wife could have a baby during the game. So that's another storyline. Stevie,
you have the Vegas odds on that?
I do not.
We could have potentially three Kelces on the field for the Super Bowl. The two brothers and then a new one. I mean, we'll have four
because of the wife.
Yeah, there's going to be a lot of them there.
There's also a petition for the mom to do the coin toss. So that's another Kelce on the field.
I didn't know about that. Oh, has it been
super?
Is it out there? If she's going to do the half jersey thing, she has to.
She is.
She's got to be.
Yeah, she is. And I think that the petition has like 100,000 supporters. Like, she's talked about it. A lot of people. Yeah.
I think she said she doesn't want to do it, though.
She doesn't want to do it because she doesn't want to take away from the spotlight.
That's class right there. The petition that I want to know is active is having Jackson Mahomes removed. How can this guy be allowed to attend this game? He's going to steal so much attention with his TikTok dance. I thought Patrick didn't want him at the games. Come on. That's a petition that I would press.
And Mahomes' wife, she, you know, maybe now since they have a child, she'll not be as crazy. But man, when she's like screaming at the top of her lungs and pouring champagne on fans, like, yeah, they got to chill out over there. I'll give my X factors really quickly, and I have a couple other quick questions, and then we're gonna wrap it up. So my X factors, it's kind of tough. I don't know if either guys could win Super Bowl MVP, but I'm going to go Isaiah Pacheco for the Chiefs. I really think he's been such a huge part of this offense, and especially if Mahomes is getting pressured, he's going to have to kind of pitch it out to someone quick, and I think, you know, Pacheco could really have a big factor in this game, because obviously the Eagles are going to try to limit Kelce. You know, Marquez Valdes-Scantling's been having a huge postseason. So, you know, Pacheco, like, I feel like they're going to try to design ways for him to really get involved. And I think, you know, if the Eagles stop him, then they have a great chance of, you know, winning and doing well. But I think he could be a guy that can kind of take over, almost like a Corey Clement with the Eagles against the Patriots. And maybe, obviously, now Pacheco's more known than Clement was. But how Clement had just those, you know, big plays here and there and stuff. So I think him. And then for the Eagles, TJ Edwards, a linebacker, you know, can he kind of take away from guys like Pacheco? You know, if Mahomes kind of dumps it off to him quick, can he be there to stop him before Pacheco can make a big chunk play? Or Edwards, I'm sure he's going to be kind of, you know, I'm trying to think of the other Eagles linebackers that are, you know, will be in coverage. Like, you know, Edwards is probably going to have to be that guy to try to stop Kelsey and stuff like that in the middle of the field and all that. So, like, Edwards is going to have his hands full, and he's a Wisconsin guy, so I already like him and know him, but he's been playing well in the NFL, and, you know, he's had some big games already. So he's going to have a lot of good matchups on Sunday. And, you know, I think, obviously, we know, you know, the Eagles D-line, they're going to be getting pressures and stuff, but how, you know, and their secondary guys, you know, obviously, you know, they're going to have their matchups, but how's Edwards going to do in the middle of the field? And, you know, and really, and I don't know who calls the plays. He might call the plays. I'm not too sure, but I think those are my two X factors. You know, if Pacheco has a great game for the Chiefs, then, you know, I'm liking the Chiefs' chances. But then if Edwards is, you know, being dominant, you know, I know, like I said, I know that the Eagles D line is going to get pressure and stuff, but if Edwards is going to be able to kind of man that middle of the field and kind of stop Kelsey or limit Kelsey and limit some other guys, then I like the Eagles' chances. So, so let's just do, before I get into my other questions, final predictions. Who's hoisting the Lombardi Trophy Sunday, a little later than and right now it's, you know, 8:04 p.m. On a Thursday. So, you know, probably by 9:00 on Sunday, 9:30, I would imagine the game would definitely be over. So that time on Sunday, who's hoisting the Super Bowl? And you know, just give a score prediction. Obviously, it's tough to predict the score. So, Castle, we'll go with you first.
The game will be over by 9:30?
At 10:00, I don't know.
First off, the halftime show alone is like a half
hour. That's right. That's right. All right. So,
11.
All right. Late Sunday night.
Won't start till close to 7 anyway.
Kick off 6:30.
That's when the coverage starts.
No, the coverage starts all day. When you wake up, the coverage is starting. All right, Castle, who's winning the Super Bowl and what's the score?
I'd just like to say there was one X factor that we all neglected. That's Rihanna. She is an X factor. The halftime show will be a big element of this game.
Oh, you just – Chelsea, kept, that was coming.
All right.
That's coming, yeah.
Score prediction, I saw this posted on an Instagram page, and I thought it was kind of funny because, like, it was one of those script posts, like, oh, this is what the script will have set. So I'm going to go with the script theme, trend, whatever. And I'm going to say, and this pains me, so I don't, you know, certain people that listen to this show, you know who you are, give me backlash when I say things about positive about the Eagles. So I don't expect any backlash from you people, but I have to say the Eagles will win. But I'm going to make it interesting. I'm going to say it's 34-31 Eagles. Jake Elliott ices the game with a game-winning field goal. That's my prediction.
What was the score again?
34-31. Jake Elliott ices the game with a game-winning field goal.
All right. I like that. And, I mean, it means it'll be a good game. It'll come right down to the wire. So 34-31, Jake Elliott game winner. That happens. We can book it to Castle. So, Fromitz, let's hear from you.
Trying to think what numbers I have in my boxes so I could try to figure out.
Like, oh, come on. Just pick a number.
I think I saw there was an 8 and a 2. I just don't remember the teams. Like, I struggle trying to figure out if this is going to be a high or a low scoring game, just given Philly's offense, Philly's defense, but like the Kansas City Chiefs offense. So we're going to go Kansas City by 4, 27-24, 3-point game.
All right, so another 3-point game. No game winner, though, right? It's just
Pat Mahomes game-winning drive.
Oh, so he does game-winning drive, huh?
Game-winning drive, they're trailing. Game-winning drive, touchdown, Travis Kelce.
All right.
After like 11 o'clock, though, Stevie.
Okay, fair enough.
You might be sleeping when it happens.
I might be sleeping. Depends if I, like, you know. But depending on if I still have COVID, I may not have to go to work Monday. So, some might be able to sleep in Monday morning, but which they should make Monday a holiday after the Super Bowl. But that's a whole other conversation.
We could have a whole episode about that. We really could.
We could. We really could. We could. Maybe we'll get that petition. There's probably a million petitions like that started, so we won't be the first ones. I'm torn on the team, but I'm going to go with the Chiefs. I'm going to go with the Chiefs. Mahomes gets the second one. I don't see Mahomes losing another Super Bowl, going 1-2 to start his Super Bowl dynasty. So I'm going to go Chiefs 33, Eagles 27. For me, it's not a game-winning drive. If anything, it's like the Eagles are, driving to come back and, maybe Hurts throws a pick or a fourth down incompletion or something like that. And then, maybe Mahomes just takes a knee and they celebrate all over the field. So Kansas City 33, Philly 27, that you could book it for the real Stevie B. So those are those predictions. Now, the predictions that everyone cares about halftime are the best Rihanna. She's performing. So, fellas, what song is she starting out to? I mean, that's probably one of the biggest questions of the game.
I've been going back and forth about this. So I think I told when we were talking about this, I think I said Umbrella. But I could also see like Please Don't Stop the Music being the one that opens it.
But I'm thinking Diamonds.
But I just think when you think of intros and how sick it would be, like either All of the Lights, and I think that's Castle, so I'm sorry for that. But
no,
but Run This Town. Like, think about how cool, like, either one of those two would be.
That would be pretty cool.
I just threw out four songs, so I'm sorry, but...
You're just thinking all the songs she's probably going to perform.
But... Well, I mean, she's got so many. I don't think it really matters.
Yeah, but, it's not like it's her whole concert. It's limited. She'll only do a couple of songs. She won't do each song as long, but, she doesn't have... It's not a whole tour.
I'm going to go... Sienna, and I was thinking about this earlier too. I think All of the Lights would be a really, like we just said, a lot of songs could be great to start off her set. Now I'm kind of second guessing myself because of someone who's on that song. Even though that they wouldn't play his part, I feel like it could be a PR thing where they don't want to play it. So I'm going to say All of the Lights, but I think my backup, I would have to agree and say Run This Town. Diamonds, that could be a good one, but I feel like that's kind of like a middle of the when you're at like a concert and like an artist will do like kind of like a slower song or like an acoustic song. I feel like she can throw Diamonds and that would be more of a middle. I feel like we're going to see something with a lot of lights and All of the Lights and Run This Town, something like that. I think either would be.
Well, the reason why I'm saying Diamonds, just hear me out, is, it's always, sometimes the performers, they start off on the roof, like Katy Perry was like, she was on top and then she like came in on the tiger, whatever it was. Yeah, and then
it was on the scoreboard.
Yeah. So like, who knows where she's going to start, but then imagine shine bright like a diamond. And then like the light just shines on her and that's when you see her, and then she gets into the other stuff. So that's why I'm kind of playing in my head right now. Like I'm already like kind of forecasting what like it's gonna look like, because it's not just the song itself. It's like how do you like, because she's not just gonna be on stage with the mic and then like that, like it's gonna be some sort of, or like The Weeknd was like he was like inside where, like, in the dressing room, they walked all the way out with all the crazy dancers and stuff. And then he made, you know, like, so the way the performers are, like, you know, like, introduced, like where they come out from, like, that's almost, like, the big thing, not even the song. So that's why I think Diamonds, especially it being the Super Bowl, like, you know, with, you know, they get, like, you know, the teams playing for the Super Bowl trophy, you know, and the, you know, not that the trophy's made out of diamonds, but, like, you know, then they get the diamond rings and stuff like that. So, like,
that's why I could see that being, like, the end type of.
But I don't think that's the best song to end with, though. So so we'll go with either Run This Town, and then I'll go with Diamonds.
Solid.
All right, and then we'll leave it at that. So obviously, there's a whole many more, you know, the national anthem times and Gatorade colors and stuff like that, and all that good stuff. And I'm sure people, you know, they all got their Super Bowl pools and bets and stuff like that. DraftKings and FanDuel are probably gonna absolutely love this weekend, especially with Gronk's whole shenanigans with his. Was it? They'll give out $10 million to everyone, not to each
it'll
person.
It'll be a free bet if he makes a kick and he's doing a live commercial. So that'll be pretty.
Yeah, and it's not that each person will get a free $10 million bet, but they're total $10 million.
Basically, we get a free bet to place type of thing.
Yeah, yeah. So it's going to be fun. And then the commercial is always good. So it doesn't matter really who, what team is playing. It's just going to be a fun weekend. So obviously, hopefully one of these years, one of our teams will be back into it. But regardless of Super Bowl Sunday, it's going to be good food and good entertainment. And wish I didn't have COVID, but it is what it is. So I hope, you know, everyone enjoys their Super Bowl Sunday and all the festivities with that. And obviously, we'll talk about how the game goes next week and other sports news. But before we wrap up, couple quick shout outs. You know, TJ, hope you are doing well at work, but thank you for all the great social media content, even while you're at work. Hopefully just don't tell your boss that. And you know, all the good stuff you do. And then shout out to Liberty Shirt Co. You know, the Fox guys, you know, obviously this is gonna be their last broadcast of the year until next season, but they're gonna be looking fresh for the Super Bowl because of Liberty Shirt Co.
Yeah, but there's other sports. They NCAA.
True. That is true.
I think USFL starts soon and XFL.
XFL starts next Sunday.
And that's ESPN, but I think USFL is
Fox. Yeah. So either way, I mean, these guys are looking good because of Liberty Shirt Co. I've been home all day, still haven't, you know, the mail's been coming, but nothing, no shirts or anything from Liberty Shirt Co. So I'm still waiting on that. But either way, those guys are going to look good. And yeah, that's it. So thank you. And thank you to everyone who listens and, you know, keep listening. We'll keep creating all this good content and, yeah, boys, let's keep it rolling. So, yeah, everyone enjoy the game and, we'll see you guys next week.